Hello and welcome to the Kitchen Table Theology Podcast, where each week, Pastor Jeff Cranston explores biblical theology that provides practical life applications in an understandable way. Thanks for joining us at the table. Let's get started.
Hello again, Kitchen Table Theologians. I'm your host, Tiffany Coker, and along with my dad, Pastor Jeff Cranston, we are going to continue in our Bible overview series today. So Dad, hey, how are you doing? Let's just go ahead and dive right in.
Yeah, hey, how are you?
Good.
Busy.
Been running around today, yes.
Running around like a chicken with your head cut off with
yes,
all those children. Yeah, and hello again, Kitchen Table Theologians. So let's begin today. Tiff, let me ask you, what's your favorite movie?
Ooh,
and let me ask you, Kitchen Table Theologians, what's your favorite movie? And Tiff, can you distill it down to just one?
Maybe.
That's hard.
I have one that is a classic that I watch over and over again and always love it. And that is, I'm maybe embarrassed to say, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. It's a favorite for sure.
Yes, you should be embarrassed to say that.
There's so many great movies. I love movies, so that's hard. I have a plane movie. Anytime I travel, I watch The Devil Wears Prada. That's probably embarrassing also.
That's not theologically accurate, though.
No.
We should do a podcast on the theological accuracy of The Devil Wearing Prada.
It would not be good, I'm sure.
I don't have a favorite movie, so don't ask me.
All right.
I'm not a movie guy. Very much. I only like ones that are extremely realistic, and
yeah,
there are like hardly any of them.
You love books, though. You love to read.
I do love books, but there is a movie I watch every Christmas season, and it's not a Christmas movie, and
What's that? Old.
It's actually black and white.
Now I'm interested.
It's called, now that I've said that, Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House.
Dream House. I've seen that. That is a good one.
I just think it's hilarious.
It is.
And I think because I'm the father of daughters and he's the father of daughters, and we built a house when you all were about that age. And so it's very old, but don't ask me who's in it. But anyway, what if I told you, and Kitchen Table Theologian, what if I told you there's a new movie for you to watch, and it's a great story. It's a love story. It has all the elements of a great romantic film. It's got a beautiful and courageous heroine. There's a supervillain who places people's lives in jeopardy, sort of how Lex Luthor is to Superman. It's full of suspense and irony and exotic locations. There's a sudden twist in the action. And of course, it all ends happily ever after. For the good guys, at least, it doesn't end happily ever after for the bad guys. Now, would you want to know the name of that movie?
I think we all would definitely want to know what movie you're talking about. I'd go see it.
I know you all know where I'm already going with this. And what I just described to you is not an actual movie, but I'm sure that's the plot of any number of movies. But what I'm talking about is the Old Testament book of Esther. What I described there, that's in the book of Esther. So Tiff, what springs to mind when you think about the book of Esther? I'm sure you think about the book of Esther all the time, but on the rare occasion when it does pop up, what do you think about?
Well, Esther is one of my favorite books of the Bible, actually. And one thing that I do remember is that it's one of only two, I think, books in the Bible that never mention God, which is so interesting to me. But you can see him throughout the book, but his name is never mentioned. And Dad, correct me if I'm wrong, but the other one, I think, is Song of Solomon. Not as confident on that one, though.
Yeah, well, you're right. Esther does not contain the name of God anywhere in the book. And depending on the translation you're reading, Song of Solomon is the other one. There are two translations that have the word Lord in Song of Solomon, and only one time, and that's the ESV and the NASB. But that's neither here or there that much. But yeah, you're right. It's very interesting. But we do see, as you said, we do see God present all throughout the book of Esther, although he's never named.
Why don't we go ahead and jump right in? Tell us a little bit about the author of this book, maybe something about the date that it was written. I know I've heard there's lots of discussion about the authorship, so you can fill us in on that. But hopefully we can nail down the date here with some accuracy, thanks to history.
Yeah, we could do an entire podcast probably on the authorship of the book of Esther, and it would be interesting to four or five of us, probably. But just so who wrote the book of Esther? Well, most likely, and I'll give you a hint here, most likely the unidentified author of Esther was a Jew with extensive knowledge of the Persian royal court. The events in the book, the in-depth accounts of court life in the Persian court, and the customs of that day suggest that the author was an eyewitness to these things, all these events. Most scholars, as I said, most people believe it was authored by a Jewish man writing. So get this in your mind, kitchen table theologian, writing for the remnant of Jewish people who had returned to Judah under Zerubbabel. There were three returns to Judah out of the 70-year Babylonian captivity. This guy's writing to one of those groups of people who returned under Zerubbabel. And we know that because whoever wrote it is very pro-Jewish in the writing. And although the text prays for one of the main characters, Mordecai, implies that someone else, possibly one of Mordecai's younger contemporaries wrote it, some have claimed that Mordecai is the author. But if that's the truth, he does praise himself a little bit more than other biblical authors do. Well, let's think about this. Since her name is on the book, we might assume Esther was the author. Well, she's not the author, but she is the star of the show. And Esther was a young girl who also went by the Jewish name Hadassah. So when we meet her, she's Hadassah, but she adopted another name, which we know as Esther. We know she was young. She was a beauty queen who had been snatched away from her guardian, her older cousin, Mordecai, and she was placed with many other young women in the king's harem, or for our United Kingdom listeners, the harem. And she worked her way into the heart of the king of Persia, who was Xerxes. So this unexpected beauty pageant competitor became the queen of Persia, and she took on the name Esther, which translates to star. So her name not only means star, she's the star of the book. As far as when it was written, we can nail that down a bit because of the events of the circumstances we read about. We know those events took place between 483 and 473 BC, and that was in the first half of King Xerxes' reign. The story takes place in Susa. We've already talked about Susa in a couple of recent podcasts. That's the capital city of Persia. And they all appeared quite happy to stay there. This all took place around the same time as the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. The book was, I think we said in a couple of podcasts ago, most believe what took place in the book of Esther happened between chapters 6 and 7 of Ezra. I'm going on memory there, so don't quote me. But anyway, the book was likely written during the reign of Xerxes' son, whose name was Artaxerxes, which places it no earlier than 470 BC, most likely no later than 424 BC. So let's call it was written approximately about 450 BC. That took a while to get there.
Yes, that was a lot, but we got our basic info, our unidentified author. We got the date narrowed down a little bit. You did name some names in there, kind of introducing the characters here. I feel like we should maybe learn a little bit more about who those are. Maybe I will read what I think are some of the key verses that set up the story, and then you can give us maybe like a brief bio on them. I feel like you just gave us a bio on Esther, so we can get some of those other people in there. You can do something similar. Does that work?
That works, and I can't wait to hear your name pronunciation.
Oh, yes, here we go. Okay, do my best.
You'll do fine.
Esther chapter 2, verses 5 through 7, read this. Now there was a Jew in Susa, the citadel, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, son of Shimei, son of Kish, a Benjaminite. He was bringing up Hadassah, that is Esther, the daughter of his uncle, for she had neither father nor mother. Okay, so that kind of gets us started there. Is there anything else we should know about Esther? And then I'm guessing you're going to tell us about Mordecai as well.
Well done on the name pronunciations. Well,
thank
way
you.
To go. So early in the story, we learn Esther, as you just read, was an orphan. She's raised by her older cousin, Mordecai. The Bible mentions Esther's tremendous beauty as the reason she was rounded up into the king's harem, and after a killer spa treatment and a beauty contest, that's true.
Right.
They gave them the equivalent of a great spa treatment, and then there was a beauty contest, and she was ultimately named queen. So she's the only person in the Book of Esther to have her two names pointed out, perhaps as a nod to her assignment that God gave her to live in both identities within this very powerful, she's in the epicenter of the Persian Empire. She's also the only character who changes of sorts in the book. Initially, when we see her just after she's queen, she's very reticent about speaking to the king, but then she gathered the courage by the end of the book to advocate strategically for the lives of the Jewish people. So we see a real maturing and a bit of a 180 during the book in terms of how Esther behaved herself and acted.
All right, let's stick with our other Jewish character right here that we've introduced. That's Esther's cousin, Mordecai. What do we need to know about him?
Well, you just read about his family tree. And by that family tree, we know that Mordecai's family spent about 114 years in exile, away from Judah for various reasons. And as you read through the book, we see Mordecai, who under extreme stress and duress, he demonstrates devotion, discernment. There's a calm resolve about him. And as Esther's older cousin and guardian, he advised her and provided insight for the survival of the Jews. A good guy.
Right. So those are our two main Jewish characters, but there are also two pretty key Persian people. Who are they? And I'll let you say their names this time. What can you tell us about them?
Sure. Ahasuerus is also known by his Greek name Xerxes. He was the king of Persia, who Esther became his queen, and he reigned from 485 to 465 BC. He was well known as a warmonger of sorts, and he was also known infamously for his very humbling defeat after attempting to conquer Greece, and the Greeks defeated him. The ancient Greek historian Herodotus states Ahasuerus was, quote, arrogant, unstable, and ineffective, end quote.
Wow.
So take that, Xerxes. In the Book of Esther, Ahasuerus appears in the book consistently, but he's very, and again, we're talking about Xerxes. There's two names for him as well. I guess maybe I was not fully correct when I said Esther was the only one, but he comes across as being easy manipulated, a quick temper, but enormous wealth, enormous power, which can be a volatile combination. And then the second Persian character is Haman, a man named Haman. He was a member of the Persian court, had a position higher than any of the other nobles, and he's the primary villain in the story. He's Lex Luthor. So we read about his motives, his emotions, his feelings. They're all portrayed to us in the book. He also comes across as insecure, and he's very eager for recognition and honors. He manipulated the king into decreeing a genocide of the Jews. And of course, the king did this not knowing that Esther was, in fact, a Jew.
Well, that gives us some insight into who all of our characters in this book are. Can you share with us some of the theological themes that are found in the Book of Esther?
Yeah, let's go back to what we talked about earlier. For many people, the most notable issue theologically is that God is never specifically mentioned. And there have been innumerable books and sermons written over the years and preached over the years on the Book of Esther entitled The Hidden God. I'm just sure of it, The Hidden God. But while his name is not specifically mentioned, God is present and active everywhere throughout the book. And you see his presence in divine coincidences, which there are no coincidences. There are none, really. These are providential, God providentially moving events in the way that he wants them to go. So we see his presence there. We see the Jewish people in lament and in fasting. Well, why are they lamenting and why are they crying out? Well, it's because of this decree. Who are they crying out to? God. They're fasting because it's part of the law. They're fasting because God said to fast. So we see him there. There are sudden, very sudden reversals in circumstances that God is behind. His presence you see his presence in the leadership as he's leading Mordecai and Esther. You just know God's got his hand behind all this. Theologically speaking, I find it somewhat, well, and personally speaking, I find it somewhat satisfying that we can see God presented like this, because isn't this often the case in our lives? Kitchen table theologian, think about your own life and you feel like there are times where God goes a little bit hidden, a little bit silent. So detecting God when he is seemingly absent is a thing in our life, and yet he's never absent. So I think we can kind of jive with that whole idea. And I think we can view God through this book as the hidden but present God. And that's a very strong theological theme in the book.
And I think when you take that view, it really does become easier to see the hand of God throughout the book and how he's orchestrating events and how he's working through his people. I think another thing that we see throughout this book is God's faithfulness. Dig into that one a little bit for us.
Yeah, absolutely we do. And for those who seek to find it, you see the faithfulness of God in the stories, first of all, in the story's so-called coincidences. Secondly, in Mordecai's assurance that assistance of the Jews will come, and he says this, quote, from another quarter, end quote. Like assistance is going to come from somewhere outside of us. Assistance is going to come from elsewhere. Assistance is going to come from some place where we might not even be aware of it. And he says this will come in the event that Esther is unable to provide that. Mordecai's faith in God is like, well, don't worry about it. There's help that's going to come from somewhere else because God is faithful. And then we also see God's faithfulness when you consider friends and his own wife. Her name was Zeresh. They all tell Haman, you are undoubtedly going to fall before Mordecai the Jew. And all of these are signs of God's faithful work. And in fact, the term another quarter that I just referenced is regarded in a lot of rabbinical literature, extra biblical literature. You'll read that phrase often. That's a reference to God in rabbinical literature. So all of that, I'll wrap up with this. God's promise to Abram is brought to mind by the seemingly inevitable consequences that the Jews will survive all of this and that their enemies will be vanquished. Because if you go back to God's promise where he told Abram, I will bless those who bless you and the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. That's the Abrahamic covenant from Genesis 12. So his faithfulness remained consistent because he is faithful. So the seemingly obvious outcome is that the Jews are going to survive all of this and that their adversary will be destroyed. That simply reminded them of God's promise to Abraham. So there, in that fact alone, I think we see God's faithfulness. Another key theological theme in the book of Esther.
Well, kitchen table theologian, there you have it. I think we'd all be remiss if we didn't open our Old Testament up today and just read the book of Esther. We didn't go into detail on how it ends there. So if you've never read it, I really encourage you to read it. It is a short book, fast paced. It's a great story. And I hope your faith will be encouraged. So once again, we read of the deliverance of God's people. The Jews were victims of a royal decree, which ordered their destruction. But the threat is averted by Esther and Mordecai. God proved to be faithful. And then the tables turn on their enemies. What a really great story it is and would make an awesome movie. Maybe one
yep,
day.
It sure
but
would.
Anyways, thanks so much for listening to the Kitchen Table Theology Podcast with Pastor Jeff. If you're enjoying it, please take just a minute to leave a rating or a review, especially on iTunes. We really do appreciate your help in getting the word out. Don't forget, you can check out today's episode notes and more at jeffcranston.com. You can also email us anytime. It's pastorjeff@lowcountrycc.org. As always, thanks are due to our friends here at Low Country Community Church in Bluffton, South Carolina, and at Streamline Podcast for making this podcast possible. Next week, we will be continuing our Bible overview series with a look at Paul's letter to Titus. Until then, always remember that the real power of theology is not only knowing it, but applying it. Thanks for joining us at the table.
You've been listening to the Kitchen Table Theology Podcast with Pastor Jeff Cranston. Join us next time for more insights into biblical truth. If you'd like to know more on today's topic, please check out our show notes. If you have a question from today's podcast, kindly email us at pastorjeff@lowcountrycc.org. If you're enjoying this podcast, would you consider leaving a rating and review? We deeply appreciate your help in getting the word out. And be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or in your favorite podcasting app to continue this journey with us as we learn about and apply God's word to our lives. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time here at Kitchen Table Theology.